All right, here we are with another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Morning, Sal.
Morning, Ryan.
How's it going today?
It's just wonderful.
Good. Hey, we have a returning guest.
A returning guest,
absolutely. Leah Anderson is back, and it's been a little bit since she's been here, not quite a year. So, Leah, you are now the Senior VP of Land O'Lakes and President of Winfield United. That is a title change since the last time you were here. And you didn't go backwards. So can you attribute this promotion and this move in career to your last performance on the high ground?
I'm not gonna lie to you that those things really,
yeah, they seem to have lined up.
I know. They told me they were basically like, you know, we like the other guy better, but at the end, the tiebreaker was your high ground podcast. So, thank you guys, really, because without you, none of this would have happened.
We're here to help. I mean, we put this thing together to help.
I have to tell you, I loved our time together last time, and I'm seeing the high ground. I'm seeing a sweatshirt. I think I've seen your logo or a sweatshirt in the background there.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys gave me one of those, and I love that thing. In fact, I was going to wear it for you today, but it was in the dirty clothes bin because my kids stole
it. That's good. She's always, I like it.
She loves that sweatshirt.
Yep.
So up here in Minnesota, we are advertising your podcast every time we go outside in the afternoon when the workday's over. So anyway.
Perfect.
Great to be back, you guys, and really appreciate the invitation.
Well, great. Hey, we're going to start you off with the question of the day, and then we're going to get into something serious. But your question of the day is, what do you do at the end of the day to relax?
Okay.
Easy question.
And relax would mean something besides work, or I didn't know if you knew the definition of relax or not.
That's why I'm laughing. So I have this ring that I wear that monitors my, you know, all my biometrics and my stress levels, and it constantly is telling me that I'm really stressed out.
Red.
And telling me to relax. So I'm laughing because I'm like, well, when's the last time I've done that? I would say I'm not in the phases of my life right now where there's a lot of relaxing, but I would, most of the time, if I'm not traveling, I'll get home from the office and I go directly to mom mode, right? There's no like interim period.
As soon as you walk in the
door. Work mode, mom, you know, yeah. And the second I get home, the dog puked on the carpet. We need to go to practice in 30 minutes. Like, who's making dinner? You know? So I'm not sure there's a lot of relaxing. I will say probably my favorite time of the night is driving my daughter to practice, because that's the one time we're just focused on catching up and having a nice chat. And, you know, that's when you get all the good stuff about what's going on in the land of the 15-year-olds. And that's probably part of the day I look forward to the most. But yeah, there's not a lot of relaxing other than that car ride, I suppose.
We kind of figured that might be your answer. Yeah. So that you didn't have a lot of that.
That's awesome.
So Sal, what do you do?
Probably, you know, by the time we get home and you know, work, right? After dinner and after catching up and just seeing how Kate's day went and what Kim got into, and then before bed, I just probably just read, you know, just reading books and listen to a lot of audio books where it saves your spot, you know, when you're coming early to work, listen to audio book, get home in the evening, and you can kind of take off where you left off. So that's probably what I do.
Cool. Well, I do a couple of different things. I do like to read, and it's funny you said that it saves your spot, because my daughter got me a bookmark at Christmas, and all it says on it is, this is where you fell asleep last night. So it's nice. It's nice to have that when you flip the book back up. You're like, oh, I do remember that. Yeah. So, but every once in a while, I just like sit down, I play guitar a little bit. And so just 10 or 15 minutes of that is just, that's sort of just get your mind in a different frame. And I like it. I have a pretty extensively long drive in the evening. So I usually go from being keyed up to trying to stay awake to then sort of keyed up again. So yes, it's not the worst activity in the world. So thank you for that. And so you've been on the high ground, before in May of 2023. You had a different title then. So tell us a little bit about your career path and what's changed.
What's happened this past year?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to thank you all for your business, because thanks to great owners and great partners like Premier, we've got you know, a great 2023 that we have in the rearview mirror now. We had really strong performance and momentum that we built in our business. And we're so grateful for wonderful owners like you to help make that happen. You know, my job previous to the one I have now was a commercial sales role. And that was probably the favorite job so far that I've ever had. And the reason why is because it forced me to make sure that I was investing my time as a leader out locally in the country with the people that own us, not sitting in a conference room like I am right now with a whiteboard talking about what we think we know, but really getting out and listening, understanding what's working, what's not, and remembering why we exist. You know, I mean, we have this purpose statement that we talk about. We say it's all about enabling the retailer to be the hero at the farm gate. And that really is what drives me personally. It's what drives our business. And that opportunity that the company gave me to do that commercial sales role was so critical. And I want you all to know that external focus, that grounding in our local communities and our retailers who own us, is something that I'm going to keep front and center in my heart and my head as I have this new position today running Winfield United more broadly. So yeah, it's been some great experience for me personally. The business is in a wonderfully fortunate spot. And you know, we're coming up here in a little bit more challenging year, I think, in terms of some of the headwinds in agriculture more broadly. But I think we've got the right team on the field to do it, and just really grateful for the opportunity.
Well, it's neat to, I guess, the question of the day, and that kind of leads into this question is I think people look at, I mean, it would be easier for people to look at your career and especially just in the last year and just see your career path. And obviously it's a lot of hard work involved, but I'm sure there's been a lot of obstacles too in your career coming through. Can you kind of tell us what brought you to today? I mean, you're kind of life's a drunkard's walk, right? I mean, all the things that kind of happen. So,
So
kind of tell us about everything that built up to this position today.
I love this question. And, you know, this might be a place where I talk so long, you have to tell me to shut up, because I have a really atypical career path. For someone who has the job that I do today. And, you know, I think part of the takeaway on that for folks that are listening is, one, you know, careers just are not linear. No. You don't graduate from college when you're 22 and think, well, that's the job I'm going to go get. And here's the 8 hops that I have planned out in my, you know, my diary about how I'm going to make that happen. And it's just up, 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 and linear. That's just not how careers work. They tend to be forwards and backwards and sideways and all things in between. And you'll hear that kind of in my story. I think the other thing for folks who are thinking about their own careers is, hopefully a takeaway is just not to let yourself get what some folks refer to as imposter syndrome. And I don't know if you guys have heard that term, but it's really about, you know, we talk about imposter syndrome as kind of letting that little inner voice that starts saying, well, you don't know how to do this, or you don't have that bullet on your resume, or everyone else can, you know, has done this for 5 years and you've done it for 5 months, or you didn't grow up on a farm, or whatever those things are, kind of that inner voice of doubt, where you can start deciding that you can't take that next step, or you shouldn't apply for that job, or you shouldn't put yourself out there. But instead, you know, kind of my journey was around saying yes to all those things and trusting myself that I could learn it or that I could figure it out, and trying to focus on what I could do or what I did know versus a lot of the things that I didn't. So kind of story-wise, I graduated from undergrad with a math degree, people. Math and computer science.
Nice.
That's where I started. And if you would have asked me what I was going to be doing when I'm 45, this is not what I would have told you I'd be doing. I thought I was going to be doing something in technology. And that's actually where I started my career. My first job out of college was writing code on a green and black screen for an insurance company's mortgage claims system. And you guys are probably picking up, I'm a raging extrovert. How do you think that went? Okay. Like, no, they, for like a hot
what?
Second, they're like, okay.
Yeah, we kind of picked up.
They promoted me. I was 23 years old. They're like, you seem a little people oriented. So they promoted me to be a manager of these mortgage claim system programmers. You know, 23 years old, bossing around these 55-year-old ladies. And I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I don't even know. So anyway, that wasn't great. Somebody called me who knew me. I ended up taking a shift over to a different company. And folks may have heard of it. It's called US Bank. It's one of the biggest banks in the United States. And I went over there. They hired me to write information security policy. Okay. Oh. Okay. So like, you know, if you start at a new company and you have to like sign the thing that says my password will be 6 characters and 2 exclamation points and a number and whatever. Okay. It was my job to like write those rules.
And you're qualified.
I'm keeping it clean here, but I was an HE double hockey sticks. Okay. I'm a Minnesotan. Visualize those hockey sticks people. Okay. So I'm like, what am I doing? Right. So I kept getting some different opportunities at US Bank, and I ended up doing some pretty cool things. By the time I left there, I was leading IT strategy for US Bank, and I kind of had my career catapulted by a gentleman who really sponsored me. And that was the first time in my career where I experienced a senior leader investing in me. And he yanked me out and he said, you know, I think you have more potential than writing information security policy. And I'm like, I do? I do? You know, this isn't it. But he invested in me in that way. Now I had to be willing to take some risks and take some opportunities he brought to me. But that was one of the first times where I had someone give to me in a way that was transformational for my career. And I today have a real strong sense of obligation to give back, to pay it forward, whichever way you want to talk about it, because I was a recipient of that sponsorship. And it really did catapult my career. And I learned so much by watching him. He ended up leaving US Bank. I worked for a guy that was more worried about how my nails looked. This is true. Like, he would always comment on my nails than the work we were doing. And it was just not a good fit. So
Seems odd.
Yeah, doesn't it?
I mean, it was odd. His nails looked amazing, though, by the way. He got them done like every other week. I swear to God, that's true. So, and I don't do my nails, okay? I clip them with the clippers. I don't have time for that. So true. I can't repeat his name because I think he still works there. So I left US Bank kind of soul searching like who the heck I was, because I'd kind of rode the coattails of this other person's career. Went to Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is in healthcare. And I ran from something, not to something. And that's another important lesson, I think. I was not that excited about working for a healthcare insurance company. I was just excited about leaving the nails guy. And I probably jumped that too fast. And when I got to Blue Cross, there was a lot of things that were really interesting. I mean, you think about what's going on in healthcare right now. I mentioned my ring that's tracking my stress levels, you know, in terms of digital transformation. And what's going on with how we treat patients and manage health risk and all those things. There's some really interesting stuff, actually not dissimilar from what we're doing with plants. But I was just very fortunate to be promoted very quickly there. And I actually ended up being the youngest vice president ever at the company. And I'd had the job for like 2 months. And in Minnesota, it's a really big deal if you have like underground parking, because it's heated. And the best perk of the job was I had a personal parking spot in an underground heated parking garage. It said my name on it, like Leah Anderson. I mean, this is making it, people.
You arrived. Like, yeah.
I'm like cruising in there, parking in my spot. My car doesn't have to warm up in the evening. But I remember one day I pulled in there and I just had this, I like just was paralyzed. Like, I couldn't get out of the car. I called my husband and I said, I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't get out of the car. I cannot get out of the car. And, you know, all these years later, I'll tell you why I couldn't. It's because I was spending 70 hours a week. I had a fancy title and a fancy parking spot, but I wasn't doing work that mattered. And I was away from, at the time, my very young family. And it wasn't connected in my heart and my soul to it. You know, figuring out how to optimize healthcare insurance claims. It just wasn't something that I was connected to on a passion level. And I realized that life is about more than a paycheck. And I remember someone said to me once, stop worrying so much about the money and start following your passion. And the money will come. But by the way, you'll realize along the way that it was never about the money. And so I actually left Blue Cross 2 months after I got that job. They were like, we've never seen this before. The board of directors, like, we just gave you this huge job. I left it and I came to Lenox Lakes.
Wow.
And I actually started here in our IT organization. And I remember when I interviewed for the job, I just cannot tell you within the first three interviews, I just realized it's what I'd been missing is connection to something bigger than myself, rural communities, right? American farmer, growing America's crop, like things that matter. And by the way, I should have figured this out 20 years earlier. My parents both grew up on farms. I'm connected to all that in my bones. And it took me a couple of hops to get back to what really mattered. So that's really my story on how I got to Lana Lakes. I think the next part of the story is, well, how the heck did I end up doing this? Because I came to Lana Lakes running a big part of our IT organization. Cause in the end, that's what my career had sort of circled around. And I was doing that for about a year. And the CEO at the time came to me and said, hey, we'd like you to take a rotation. We'd like you to run our member relations organization. And I remember looking at him, I was like, are you serious? I'm a math major. I do not know anything about cows, you know? And he just kind of laughed. He said, I think you're exactly what they need. And I actually think our member owners were exactly what I needed, or maybe we needed each other. But I took that role and I spent the next 3.5 years of my life on farm, on dairies across the country, getting to understand what it really means to be a cooperative, understanding, you know, local agriculture, local production, all the things that you guys know and do every day. And representing the members back to Lana Lakes. And it was just an incredible experience. I'm so thankful for the opportunity to do that. And it really grounded me, especially in the power of the cooperative model. And that was me kind of just, you know, when I talked about imposter syndrome, I mean, can you imagine what I was thinking? I mean, I walked on a farm for the first time. I showed up and did the darn thing in heels. You know, how do you think that went on a dairy farm?
You didn't have to tell him you were a math major.
Yeah. You know, like, but I had to just trust my gut that I could figure it out. And I was able to figure it out. And people gave me that chance and welcomed me. But just such an incredible experience and me being willing to take that leap of faith, you know, and from there, I realized that I was really loving, you know, not being in technology and writing code or whatever else. So I kind of probably for the first time, maybe in my career, advocated for myself in the sense that I actually asked to get a commercial rotation into one of the business units. And the one that happened to have an opportunity was Crop Inputs, our Winfield United business. And that's how I came to Winfield United over 6 years ago now, working for Brett Brueggemann, who until very recently was the president of Winfield United and had an opportunity to do a lot of cool things, including running our crop protection business. And I mentioned sales and some other things, and now this role. But it's been a wild ride, you know, and there's so many things I didn't get into because I talked too long already around as part of those moves. Sometimes I took a demotion. You know, one time I went from leading a team of 400 people to being an individual contributor. My title changed. I had lots of titles that weren't very sexy. But it's all part of the journey and it shapes who we are. And you know, sometimes you don't realize how life's preparing you for something until you get there. But very lot of luck involved. But a lot of hard work and a lot of willingness to try new things.
That's a neat story.
Yeah, good story. So you've told us why you headed back into a career in agriculture from something in your past. But it seems like there are a lot of women who are taking an interest in careers in agriculture, maybe more so now than several decades ago, or just a few decades ago, actually. What do you think is driving the interest in agriculture and pushing people to head this direction, especially in this instance, women?
Yeah, it's a good question, you know, and it is true. And I think I read a stat, I can't remember what the actual number was, but I think more ag, you know, folks graduating today with ag degrees, I think more of them are women than men, which is really interesting. You know, I mean, why is that, right? And I have to believe that part of it is tied to this purpose thing we've been talking about. I mean, I think, and by the way, that would be not unique to women. I think guys feel the exact same way. Yep. But But more than that, I mean, I think part of it might be that there's starting to be more role models. You know, I mean, because if you don't have a role model where you see someone that's like you in a position doing something, whether it's locally at one of our retailers or, you know, whether it's with Beth Ford at CEO of Land O'Lakes, I think you think, well, I can't do that. No one like me does that thing. You know, so part of me wonders is because there are starting to be more women, especially at multiple different positions in agriculture, if college students say, oh, I actually can do that because someone like me is doing that now. I have to believe that's part of it too.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah. What, I mean, at Premier Ag, we've kind of seen that as far as the, you know, kind of the shift in the talent pool or the recruiting pool. We're at all the universities that were around locally, certainly Purdue, the agronomy classes there, and Vincennes University. And, you know, we're trying to find the best talent we can. And what, and we have added some exceptional women talent just in the last year. But what advice would you give to retailers as they're trying to source the best talent and what to look for and in the ag industry and how to recruit that best talent and then retain them?
Yeah, you just said something at the very end there that's, I think, the most important part of the answer is recruiting them actually isn't the hard part.
It's keeping them, yeah.
It's keeping them. And you know, at Land O'Lakes, we struggle with the same things. When we bring diverse talent in, they are also the ones that leave the fastest. And we've been doing a lot of soul searching about why that is, you know, what's going on, because they're excited to come work for us and then they don't stay. And, you know, I'm going to tell you a story as part of this answer. So when I first worked here, if you recall, I was in the technology team. And oh, my gosh, the women were all fired up. There weren't that many women, but they were fired up because the guys were going to these happy hours on Friday nights all the time. And they weren't inviting the women. And then we were feeling really left out. You know, they already felt different because they were probably newer to the team. And then the guys were all going to these happy hours. They were getting a lot of business talk done. And they're having a lot of fun and bonding and building relationships. And it was really impacting how these women were feeling. So I'm kind of mouthy. So I was the one that got put up to go have the crucial conversation with the boss of all these people. And I remember I called this guy, Mike. I'm like, Mike, you got to start inviting the women to the happy hour. Like, it's really creating a rift. Like, it's they're not feeling included.
Yeah, you got a click going.
And yeah, it's a click, right? Or, you know, sometimes women go to it. They say things like a good old boy club or whatever. And he goes, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, this happy hour that you organize every Friday night, you never invite the women. He goes, we don't organize a happy hour every Friday night. Just whoever's around and has time stops over at the bar and who's there. He's like, there's no like invite or anything. If the ladies want to come, tell them to show up. And it was like, you know, those exploding head emojis? Because I'm like, oh, wow.
Oh.
Hold on. This isn't the guys being jerks, not wanting to include the women. This is just them being guys. By the way, I love guys. I'm married to one. I've worked with him my whole life. A lot of my best friends are men. This is not them being jerks. This is them maybe not always thinking about
how they think. Yeah.
Remembering to invite though. Right. I mean, I think so. And this is just an example of what I'm getting at with attention, but I think both people have a role in how this went down, right? The guys have to force themselves just for a moment. Kind of like you do with your wife when she's like, you never say you love me. You're like, I told you 2 years ago, you know, I love you. She's like, no, you have to tell me every week. Same thing. Like, okay, what's the rule for the guy who's been around for a long time, is already really comfortable in the culture? Probably to remember to invite, you know, in this example. Mm-hmm. What's the rule for the woman? One, to not have imposter syndrome and go to a dark place deciding that they all hate you and think you suck, right? And two, to assume positive intent, that if they did forget to invite you to something, text and say, hey, can I come?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think that's just an example of a silly happy hour. But it was an exploding head emoji thing for me, because we actually, the new folks that are entering that are different in some way have an obligation to put themselves out there and be willing to connect and take some risks and not let them, that little whisper on the shoulder, say, you suck, no one likes you, you can't do this. And then the folks that have been part of the community kind of have a little bit of an obligation to be as welcoming and inclusive as they can. I mean, it's just like when a new neighbor moves into town, it's the same concept.
Yeah.
You know, show them the church, show them which restaurant has the best hamburgers. You know what I mean? And so I think a big part of it is, as egg retail, as more women are coming in, how do we include them in the network, in the fabric of the culture, and make them not feel other than, and then give them the training and support so that they feel like they can be as good at their job as they want to be, you know, and as an accelerated way as they can be. I mean, for me, that's a lot of it. Yeah.
Include them in the network that we probably don't even know we have.
Well, right. Because a lot of folks have worked together for a long time, you know, and that happens. So, and I think it's finding common ground, or maybe we should call it high ground, but you know, it's not good. Do you see how I worked that in?
I see that.
I'm feeling good about
saw
that
what
one.
You did there.
Looks like she's buying for another sweatshirt. Yeah. Sounds to me like
point for Leah.
But so for me, so I'm most of the time in the meetings that I'm in my life, in my career, I'm the only woman still. Right. So I might go into a meeting with one of our basic manufacturer partners and their senior team or go visit a customer, and I will be the only woman. And a lot of times what happens is, because people have worked together for a long time in this industry, they have really deep relationships and they know a guy they used to work with, or they all started at AMSI or whatever it might be. And they start start bonding about that. And so that can be hard, for example, for me, because I don't have that. So it's like hard to connect. But for example, then it's my job, I think, again, the onus isn't all just on the people that have been around for a while. It's my job then to find common ground that we can talk about. So for example, I love college football. I'm a huge college football fan, like fanatic Gopher fan. I'm sorry. No one else is a Gopher fan. I am. I follow college football very closely. I love the game. Season ticket holder for 20 years, roll four, never miss it. That is important to me. It's a personal passion. But most guys I work with also really like football. So then can we change the conversation to talk about the games last weekend and talk about something that we can all engage in, right? And so those are some things that I do, is to find that place where we can actually have something in common versus feeling other than, because, you know, I don't have that experience from the last 25 years and those other jobs those people have had together. Does that make sense what I'm saying? It's around finding that common place. Yeah.
It's pretty easy when you think about it.
I hope you're learning something, Sal. Yeah.
I am.
That's good.
I got this. Wait till I get home.
Right. Right?
You're going to tell your wife you love her.
I want to flex when I get home.
Wait. Listen to what I learned today.
Yes. So, Ryan, what else we got?
You know, I don't have anything. That's a really good story, and it's a good thing for all of us to keep in mind, because we've all been that new person, regardless. And man, it's hard. It is hard to work your way into conversations or just a feeling of being included. That's tough. And so this was great advice for everyone. But certainly, you have a career path and a story that could be inspirational to many out there. A lot of young people coming into their careers, and they just need some guidance. And boy, we get caught in a rut not talking about, here's how I got here. Which can sometimes be helpful.
It's been good.
Thank you very much. And we'll get you another sweatshirt in the mail. You just have to hide it.
No, I'm good. You don't need to give me another sweatshirt.
We can get you one that's maroon and yellow. You want one that's maroon and yellow?
Okay. Look at that. If that's a thing, then it could be a thing. Now you put that in my head, I'm going to be expecting it. No, I'm teasing.
All right. That's all I've got. Leah, thank you so much for being a guest, and we will, we'll ask you again. We'll ask you again. It's very insightful. So, if nothing further from you, do you have anything for us?
I didn't want to cut you off. Thank you. You guys, you didn't cut me off. I was just thanking you. And it was great fun. And I love spending time together, and you guys have a great, great weekend.
Absolutely. Will do. You do the same. And that's another episode of the Hot Ground, powered by Premier Companies.